Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. In this episode, I have a guest interview for you with Zoe McKinsey, also known as Actively Autoimmune on Instagram. Zoe is a physiotherapist, exercise coach, and clinical Pilates instructor who created Actively Autoimmune, which is an online exercise platform for those with chronic illness. After experiencing health issues herself from a very young age, Zoe has specialized in supporting clients around the world to find a way to move their body that works for them. She works with clients one-on-one, as well as with an on-demand virtual Pilates studio, and she has recently published her book, Exercise Well with Autoimmunity, which I have read in preparation for this interview. And together we discuss and talk about the book and answer some of the common questions when it comes to exercising, not only with autoimmunity, but with fatigue and chronic illness in general. And I actually worked with Zoe as part of her one-on-one service in my own journey, which was about 3 years ago now. And we share a little bit more about this in the podcast episode, but she helped me in a lot of ways through 3 months working together, really just to stabilize my walking routine as I was coming out of my chronic fatigue experience. But I also can see on reflection and in hindsight, there were so many things that she was telling me to do that I just wasn't ready to hear at the time. And I also got in my own way a lot. So it's been wonderful to read Zoe's book from this side of the experience and just realize how much incredible insight she has. It's beautifully written. We will talk about it more in the episode, but if you haven't already, I would highly recommend that you get a copy of Zoe's book, Exercise Well with Autoimmunity. But firstly, please enjoy this episode. And if you haven't already left a 5-star review on iTunes or Spotify, maybe just pause right now. I will really appreciate it if you can just take 30 seconds or even less, 10 seconds from your day, just to leave a review and then continue with the episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today, I have a guest interview with the wonderful Zoe McKinsey, who is or who was my exercise physiotherapist when I was going through my own chronic fatigue journey. And she has just written a book called Exercise Well with Autoimmunity. I really, when I saw that Zoe had written a book, first of all, anybody who writes a book, I'm just like, I think they're the most impressive people on the planet because I know how much time and energy and thought and effort goes into writing a book. So then I reached out to Zoe and I said, oh my gosh, you've written a book. Please come on the podcast to talk about your book. And thankfully she agreed and she's here with us today. By the time you're listening to this, I would have done a little blurb telling you a little bit more about her background. But Zoe, welcome, and tell us a little bit more about you and who you are.
Hi, well, thank you, firstly, so much for asking me to be on your podcast. It's an absolute pleasure. And yes, as you said, I am Zoe. I'm a physiotherapist. I'm also an exercise coach and a clinical Pilates instructor, so very much obsessed with movement. And I'm also got my own health journey, as I feel many people who end up specializing in chronic conditions often do. So I had Ehlers-Danlos syndrome through my teens, basically. I did actually get diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome when I was a teenager, which I always forget to even mention because at that point, this is now many years ago, if I'm old, I think it was even less understood than it is now. And then, yeah, struggled through sort of my teens, but managed. And then much later on, I sort of got diagnosed with lupus, which is when I started my online account Actively Autoimmune, if I can remember it. And that kind of started more of a specialist in working with clients with chronic conditions, teaching online Pilates, and yes, to this book that I have written. So it's been quite a journey these last sort of 4 or 5 years, especially.
Yeah, and I think that's how I found you, as people do, through Instagram. I was following your account, Actively Autoimmune, and I think like many people, if you've been somebody who's always been very physically fit and active and loved exercise, when you then go through this chronic illness experience, it's such a big loss in so many ways.
Definitely.
And I was constantly fighting myself to try and find some way to exercise. And, you know, in that typical boom and bust cycle, like doing a little bit and then crashing and then doing a little bit and then crashing. And I think like many people, you just feel so hopeless and desperate. And at that point in time, I reached out and we worked together. I think it was for about 3 months, about 3 years ago, give or take. And I, you know, I've been reflecting on that journey because I can see how at the time I was also very much getting in my own way, as I'm sure many of your clients do. Like, I think all the things that you were saying to me were like going in on some level. And we worked a lot with heart controlled walking. That for me was the kind of building block for everything else that I've since been able to do. And even though I thought I'm going to like spend money on this physio and she's going to fix everything.
I wish I could be the person Instagram advertising this magical cure and you just have to do these 4 things and these easy steps. And as we know, it never quite works like that. And anyone that does suggest it works like that is probably scamming you for your money.
Yes, exactly.
It's much more complex and much more of a journey. I think, as I often say, as someone who's so passionate about movement and helping people find a way to move with their body that works for them, I spend a lot of time telling people to do less and to rest more. And I remember that with you, especially Anna, of like, we'd kind of give an inch to try and take a mile. We're like, oh no, let's pull back again. So it's definitely, and often we need that, like, you sometimes have to go a bit wrong sometimes in order to learn where your body is at. And it's part of that kind of journey. As cliche saying it is a journey with movement when we have this diagnosis or being undiagnosed but have these symptoms to kind of navigate and cope with it. Sometimes it is just time and learning to work with your new body. But I'm glad that what we did talk about all those times is still somewhere in there that's helped you kind of, I mean, made as much progress as you have done now.
Yeah. Absolutely. Because I know we haven't really spoken much one-on-one since I stopped working with you, but I think we started with some really, really slow, short heart rate controlled walks. And that would have been like January 2021. By the end of that year, I could do like a 3-hour walk.
That's amazing.
And it was just, but it was, as you said in the beginning, it was like starting with less. And I hated
it. It's so hard.
But I also knew you were right.
Well, that's what I think. I find it so hard in general when people's worlds are already quite small, right? Because we already have so many restrictions on what we can do. And sometimes to have to tell someone we've actually got to make that even smaller and able to eventually in the long run do more. People look at me and I can see they're like, Zoe, I really do hate you for this. Like, what are you doing? You're wrong. But yeah, I'm glad I was proved right overall, but understandable at the time.
You know, I think, I know that from my profession, sometimes you have to be the bearer of bad news, but it's always with the person's best interests at heart. But it was a very important part of my own journey. Obviously, there are lots of different parts, as you know, from, you know, that we have to kind of work with, but that piece was really important, I think, in setting the foundations. And just reading your book, even now, I was like, I wish I had read this book, you know, back then, but who knows how much I would have been able to actually take on board at the time. But anyway, I'm talking about me and we should be talking about you and your book. So
no, you're much more interesting.
Is there anything else, just in terms of your own personal journey and your relationship with exercise that you want to share?
Yeah, well, I guess similar to you in that I did love exercise kind of growing up. So it was a big part of my life. I was always quite active and sporty. I used to swim competitively as a, you know, young child teenager and dance a lot. And I got my first sort of injury when I was 13. I was actually in a wheelchair when I was sort of 14, 15. So my teens was very much hampered with sort of physical disability and pain. And then over the years, I had more complications with kind of gut issues, chronic migraine, POTS, all that kind of thing each year. But all through that, I still exercise a lot. So I actually went to go Ormond Street early on my journey. And so from dancing and swimming, it became much more of sort of regimented physio exercises. But I kind of was told how important exercise was again. And I was like, okay, I've got to look after myself. There's no one going to fix this or do anything for me. I've got to do it. And probably I was quite a conscientious person, so I took that very much to heart, probably too extreme. So I was very good at exercising, but in a kind of different way to my friends. probably pushed myself too much, and definitely on reflection, given how much my fatigue was, I had quite a lot of viruses, and you know, on now I know so much more. Looking back, I'm like, I wasn't listening to my body. I was just pushing because I was in survival mode, and I felt that's what I need to do to just keep going, which I did. It kind of worked. It got me all the way up through uni. Just started to work as a physiotherapist in Australia when I then became very acutely unwell and got late diagnosed with lupus. And for me, that was a real stop. Everything came to stop at that point. I no longer could just carry on, pretend I'm fine when I really wasn't. My world was then switched to hospitals, medication. It wasn't just like, oh, manage this by yourself. And again, my sort of view of exercise changed again, because I could no longer just carry on pushing through. Like I said, I had to kind of really readapt to what I was doing and probably practice more what I was preaching to clients at that point, and kind of listen to more what I know as a principle of the physio. And yes, I had to really learn to listen to my body. And again, I was in a wheelchair for quite a time because my joints were just so swollen and painful. So I had to sort of learn to navigate walking again and building back up again. But gradually I did, and now I can do a lot more, but I still have to be very careful. And now I'd say I'm a much more balanced view between those two perhaps extremes of overdoing things, doing way less. So, and I've got a very positive, happy relationship with movement myself. I still use movement as a huge management tool, but I no longer use it to, I don't know, just ignore my body and pretend I'm okay, I guess. So yeah, so I, when I say I get it to my clients, I really do get it. I know how challenging it can be. I've been there with being really active and having to go to nothing multiple times. I've had to start again from surgeries, from flares, from changing medication also 1,000 times. So I get the ups and downs in that regard too. And also working with multiple conditions too, because again, it's much easier if we had one condition and one thing to kind of cope with. But as often many people do, it's kind of a combination of factors or different things going on that you have to learn to navigate. So yeah, it's been quite a journey myself, and that's why I love kind of using that to help others then with their journey too.
Yeah, and I love what you said about navigating different conditions, because obviously, like I work with what I call the fatigue umbrella. But as we know, fatigue can be something like long COVID fatigue, or it can be fatigue that accompanies autoimmunity, or fatigue that accompanies something like fibromyalgia. And so your book is called Exercise Well with Autoimmunity. Most people listening to this podcast might not have autoimmunity, but they could still benefit from reading your book. So can you explain a little bit more about how the book is relevant for chronic illness in general, even if people don't necessarily have a diagnosed autoimmune condition?
Yeah, definitely. So obviously I work with people with all different chronic illness, but my publishers wanted me to narrow it down to somewhat. So that's kind of why it's autoimmunity. I know, but I do see why. But yeah, the main principle of the book is to teach someone how to actually exercise, because I feel like we all get preached so much about, you know, why you should exercise, and we all kind of know that exercise can be good for us at the appropriate time. But it's quite different when you actually think, well, how do I do this when living with these symptoms, with pain, with fatigue? You know, how do I navigate that when it feels just day-to-day functioning that perhaps feels a challenge? So the book kind of guides you through that. And obviously all these conditions have different, you know, elements, symptoms or main challenges, but generally, we kind of share a lot of similarities in the main barriers perhaps that we have to exercise. So it helps you kind of understand your baseline. So the idea of what can your body cope with? And obviously, that's going to depend on a whole range of factors for that person. But it's really trying to educate you to understand, like, well, how can I know my body? How can I know what is the too much? How can I know what is not enough? And understanding what you can do. And then from there, it kind of gives you all these options of how you can possibly move. So I wish I could say again, like we joked earlier, that we could just follow these simple steps and it's all done, but there's so much nuance and it depends to all these factors. But the idea is to give you that kind of guide and that information so you can sort of work out what works for your body and also what matters to you too. If you're not interested in walking, then you're not going to try and do loads of walking, are you? So it's kind of trying to find different options that perhaps work with your body now. There's specific chapters around pain and fatigue, although it obviously does note that chronic fatigue syndrome is not the same as living with fatigue, but you know, it's still that sense of how can you manage to work with your body when it's fatigued, and then how to know when to exercise versus when to rest, how to know which pain you could exercise with or when to listen to your body, and all those kind of factors that I think is so relevant to many conditions. And yeah, it's got actual exercise in there with a full range from things from lying down all the way to standing. There's plenty of options of ways to progress and regress. So again, it's all about, yeah, trying to work out what works for you. And no one's going to be the same, even with the same conditions. So that's why it was quite a complicated book to write.
Yeah, I mean, as I said already, I've got so much appreciation for anybody who writes a book. And I would really like to write a book one day myself, but also knowing the complexity when you are working with these nuanced conditions and what to include and how to include it, because you could go down so many rabbit holes and just completely get lost.
And the research is still not, you know, there's some research, but it's not as, you know, do this many times a day or week, and we don't have that yet. So as well as that, it's based on what is the research and what's the guide versus what you can, you know, what's advisable, what clinical experience. So yeah, sadly it's not simple yet, but who knows, in the future everything might be a little bit more of a clear pathway of how to move through things with our bodies, but not yet.
Not yet, but I think it's like people like yourself are leading the way in terms of just getting this book out there for people to read. And I'm sure so many people are going to benefit from reading it. And I absolutely loved reading it as well. Like, just very honestly, I thought it was very well written, and your personality came across through the writing.
Thank
style.
You. That was really important to me. I was like, I don't want to be preachy. I don't want to be adding more things that people feel they have to be dealing with their bodies, because I feel we have enough to juggle. I very much feel like, yeah, we need to be more compassionate to ourselves. And I wanted that voice to come through. So I just wrote it as if I was speaking to a client, basically, because I felt that was the best way to do it, because I feel that's where. Nice, we're set to, you know, I'm sure you're the same to yourself. We're not always the nicest to ourselves, but very nice to our clients.
Yeah, well, I think you definitely achieved that. Kind of just coming back to, you know, exercise generally, as you mentioned, it's confusing. Like, if you're in pain, what do you do? How do you know what your baseline is? Can you exercise with fatigue? What exercises are appropriate for you? How to progress? How to regress? When? You know, all of these questions. And I can imagine somebody who's already not feeling well is probably going to go, this is just too much. I don't even know where to start. But what are the reasons for somebody to be interested in an exercise program alongside their health condition? What are the benefits of exercise in chronic condition?
So, I mean, physically, we've got all the benefits of people without chronic conditions, obviously, help us, but often even more importantly, so whether that's because of medication we're taking or whether it's because of change of our general activity anyway. Sometimes those benefits of improving our strength, our cardiovascular fitness, our metabolic health, our bone health, are even more important to help support our general body's ability to function. More specifically to perhaps chronic conditions is then things like helping to manage our pain, helping to improve our sleep quality, helping to improve our autonomic tone, because it can really help regulate our body. Also helps to improve with inflammation when done in the right dose for you. But also psychologically, there's something that's really supportive about movement that can help us reconnect with our bodies. So often when we've been through trauma with our health, physically or mentally, with what we've been through with it, we kind of disconnect quite a lot and almost try and shut off our body, which is still the opposite of what we want to do. So movement helps us reconnect, tune back in, become more aware of things and work with our bodies much more. Obviously, you can get endorphins, although I'm hesitant to say that because many people who find exercise a challenge go, I always feel oh, after exercise, and that's the least thing you want to hear, is that it can make you feel good. But it has got, obviously, helps with our anxiety, depression, and mood. And also just generally build up a sense of accomplishment too. It can often feel when we can do so little, like we said earlier, having something, no matter how small it is, that you manage to do regularly, can just help things like, oh yes, I am making some progress, or I am doing something to look after myself and supporting my body, and that can also be benefits. So there's a whole range of things, but yeah, often we know people want to exercise, but it's just that the actual how to becomes so challenging.
Yeah, and I think as well, you have a whole chapter in the book which you dedicate to goal setting and intrinsic motivation. And I never needed to be motivated to exercise. I was like the opposite. I needed somebody to like
hold you back.
But not everyone is like that. And I think, you know, when people are not feeling well, they're in pain or they feel lethargic or tired, and they're maybe not so wired towards movement, they maybe need to work on some sort of intrinsic motivation. So can you explain why that's important for people with chronic illness?
Yeah, so finding your why is even more important, because exercise or movement is probably going to look quite different to what you may have done in the past or what others around you are doing. And your goals may look very different. And some people may not even like to set actual formal goals, because that can seem demotivating in itself if it feels also very hard to set. If you think about the classic SMART goals, having all these key factors of measurable and time and specific can be impossible when it feels like your health is perhaps fluctuating somewhat or the goalposts are being moved. So just focusing on why you want to do that for you is really important. So we have even more barriers than your typical person that might prevent us from exercising, or things we have to work through. So I say, what is going to help you get on your mat or start to move when you're feeling kind of rubbish? So having a strong reason for you, that means more than just saying, I want to be strong. It's like, well, why do you want to be strong? What's that going to enable you to do? And really try and make it specific for your own particular situation. It doesn't have to be anything dramatic, like I want to be able to walk up a mountain one day. It might be, I want to be able to squat down to pet my dog more easily. It could be really simple, small things that we're perhaps aiming for, but it helps to kind of have that intrinsic motivation, like you said, that isn't around comparing to what others are doing or comparing to your past self or putting a ton of pressure on yourself for future you as well. It's kind of being more present in the moment of like, why does this matter for me at the moment? And why do I want to spend my energy on this?
Yeah, I mean, this is probably a little bit of a tangent, but I've just finished reading the book Outlive by Peter Thiel. I don't know if you've heard of it.
No.
He's a medical doctor in the US, and it's basically like a longevity book, but he talks about planning for the last decade of your life. So the last decade of your life, like what you physically want to be able to do, it might be like carrying your shopping bags or putting a suitcase in an overhead compartment when you're traveling, or being able to walk up a flight of stairs, like that type of thing. What you were saying is kind of reminding me of that book, because it's just really taking goals that improve your quality of life and give you more function and give you the ability to do more and be more in the world, instead of these like massive goals, you know, like climbing a mountain. It's like, if I do my exercises, you know, then I can go to this restaurant because I'll be able to walk up this flight of stairs, you know, whatever it is. So I also think
it's about finding things that perhaps bring you small moments of joy as well. It doesn't, you know, often the big things we think, oh, if I do this massive achievement, I'm going to be so happy and feel so proud of myself. And actually going, well, I can feel just as accomplished from managing something small, like you said, that means a lot, will make a difference to my everyday life. And I think that's really important, especially when you're in the sort of trenches of chronic illness and life is really challenging. Finding ways that, you know, you can enjoy yourself and almost feel pleasure from doing something that, you know, brings you that joy is just as important as those bigger goals. And you can have both. I mean, you can have a whole range of things. The main thing is at least having something that makes sense to you and your journey that is going to help you find that consistent approach to movement and make you kind of build that habit that helps you sustain it over time.
And on the note of consistency and sustainability, you also talk about barriers to exercise, because barriers are things that prevent consistency and sustainability. So when we have fatigue, we need to move, but sometimes we're actually fatigued and we need to rest. And that can be a little bit confusing for people to know, because that's a barrier to exercise. Do I listen to this fatigue or do I not listen to this fatigue? So how do you suggest that people navigate that?
Yeah, firstly, I think definitely not alone. It's one of the probably biggest conversations I have most regularly with my clients on through coaching. And it's always one of the hardest sort of things to navigate, I think, during the process. I think if we don't want to ignore fatigue, because obviously that can be both dangerous, but also not about working with our bodies. 9 times out of 10, when people say they didn't exercise because they felt tired, they often go down the route of like, oh, I was being lazy, I should have pushed myself. And I say like, no, I think you were just really, really tired and that's okay. So I think most of the time when we perhaps are thinking, oh, I should have done something, you can take away that should voice and just go, it's absolutely okay that I rested and that's probably what my body needed. I do understand the flip side of that though, is if we wait until we were never fatigued, we may not exercise. So to understand that balance is definitely tricky. Shortest way of answering that is, I guess, by saying the more you listen to your body, the better. And I know that is one of the hardest things probably in terms of that. But the more you know your body, the more you can start to tune into what's your body actually trying to tell you. So are there warning signs because of something you've done sort of before? Are there little signs to tell you that, okay, I can tell I've pushed my body a little bit already, therefore I probably need to rest, or actually, no, I'm okay, I'm just going to take it more easy in what I'm doing? Or is it all kind of systems going, no, absolutely rest? So the more you can tell sort of along that spectrum of what your body is trying to communicate to you, the easier it becomes to navigate what to do in that moment. And sometimes you can use tools. I'm sure you, Anna, use loads of tools, your clients too, but you know, I have many tools in my clients that can help them with that. Sometimes it could be sort of more objective data, like looking at, you know, smartwatches or things that tell you, oh, your readiness score, or your heart rate or heart rate variability, that gives you a rough idea. Other times it could be using more sort of analogies. Like I like the traffic light analogy of sort of red, amber, green. That helps you kind of know, like, oh, I'm already at amber, so I might decide I will rest because I don't want to push my body when I'm already kind of pausing things if I'm not feeling so great. But remember, it is this kind of spectrum that might not be one extreme to the other. And often having that all or nothing approach doesn't help things. So often I say, if you're really not sure, try and do something where you are. So you might be sitting on the sofa and you start doing one mobility exercise and you go, actually, oh, now I've started moving, I feel okay, I feel better from moving. Or if you start to move and go, oh no, my body's saying I feel worse, or this is not helping, you go, okay, I need to rest. So sometimes just easing into something can be a useful way to describe. But 9 times out of 10, I would say, listen to your body and rest. You're not being lazy or demotivated. It's probably that you're more fatigued than you realize.
Yeah. You know, I always think of like part of the journey that we have to go on is this journey of getting to know ourselves better. And I think in the beginning, when, and I would put myself in this category as well, we can be really disconnected from what's actually happening and what we think is happening in the body. And there needs to be a little bit of self-compassion with that, because, you know, as we're, it's like building a new friendship again. It's like, yeah, you're not going to get it right all the time. And I think, as you previously said, that sometimes we need to mess up several times to eventually start to refine how we, you know, treat ourselves.
Yeah. And our baseline constantly changes. So I think it's kind of inevitable that sometimes, you know, I always say, if we obviously have a decline in our health and our baseline worsens, we have to reassess and work out what can we do within that. And then if we do improve, it's also hard because we have to reassess now with our increased sort of opportunities for activity, what we can do. So sometimes there's a trial and error, but it's doing that trial and error in a safe way. So, you know, it's not ignoring your body so much and waiting for the massive crash to happen. It's trying to find those early signs. So if a client says, like, I get no warning, it just hits me. I'm like, often a gradual over time, we can start to tune in, like you said, reconnect to your body and start to notice those much more subtle signs where it's easier to go, oh, okay, I'm going to pause here before I've pushed it that far. And that becomes really hard. And like you said, it is time, learning, you know, to kind of get yourself in a position that you can do it in the moment. I think initially we get very good at reflecting back and go, oh, looking back last week, that wasn't so great, that it gets hard to do it in the moment. But over time, it becomes easy to be in the moment and go, actually, I'm going to choose to rest at this moment, or, you know, change what I'm going to do.
Yeah. And I mean, I think as well, like with my journey, I also started to learn, you know, with fatigue specifically, there's so many different flavors and qualities of the fatigue experience. It can feel different depending on what's going on in the body. And there are some types of fatigue where I would feel better for just going for like a short, gentle walk and doing something like something small, as you described. And then there are some times where I just knew that, like, okay, no, we need to step back. Mm-hmm. But it did take time to learn that. And also you can have a lot of fear about all the times where you did it before and it didn't work out. And, you know, navigating some of that fear and finding safety in the body is also an important part.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the fear element regarding it is huge. And I think it's definitely to be validate your fear, that you're not being irrational by having this fear, because it's probably based on your past experience. And it's okay to kind of be hesitant to what you do, but sort of gradually nudging that fear and showing, oh, I can be safe. And like you said, creating that sense of safety, which is even more important to them when you are having a play with what can I do, what is in my capacity and baseline. So just make those changes very, very small, and just sort of nudge things rather than sort of bulldoze past and then go, oh, that was too much, or, oh, you know, that's kind of the safest way of doing things.
Yeah. And on that kind of idea of safety, something I talk about a lot on the podcast is this concept of stability, like especially in the early stages, you know, when people have, for example, they've just become unwell, like they've had a viral infection and they've just sort of tipped everything over the edge, or something has suddenly happened. It's probably less so the case for autoimmunity, but I guess it can be in the beginning as well. Things can, the whole kind of physiology of the body is very unstable. And I talk about like how we just need to stabilize, create stability in the physiology. And exercise can obviously be a destabilizing component if we do too much, too soon. And so how do people know when they have enough stability to create a movement routine? Because I think sometimes they really want to get going with the movement side of things, but they're just not sure, am I stable enough? Mm-hmm. Is it time yet?
Yeah. So and again, there's a lot of fear regarding if you're not stable, and obviously we know the negative consequences of pushing the body with chronic fatigue syndrome and ME particularly. So absolutely. So in terms of stability for adding in movement, I again tend to come back to the idea of the baseline and what a client is able to manage on a typical day. So what their routine is looking like, is it stable and what they can manage and repeat? Are they in quite a boom bust pattern? You know, is it they get a few days of high intensity and then low intensity days? If they are getting flare, what are their symptoms? What's their recovery like? Because sometimes we do, like you said, misjudge things. We might have a symptom day or two, but generally recovery is okay because the body's more resilient. Whereas if it's taking weeks or even months, or they don't feel they're ever fully recovering, we know they're not stable. So there's a whole sort of ton of factors in there that give me a sense of like what the stability is like on a regular basis, and getting a sort of bigger picture rather than looking at a particular few days or a week. And it's that kind of wider picture of overall. And people, I think, generally have a sense of which direction they're going and if things are improving, declining, or staying about the same. And I think I trust people's instinct because you generally know kind of how, which direction we feel we're going roughly. It's also looking at some, I call it ripples are okay. So little fluctuations, they're okay. We still want to minimize as most as possible. But if anything, those bigger waves or tidal waves, that's what we want to avoid. And that's kind of looking, well, what else is going on here? Also zooming out, which is probably more of your than area of expertise, but looking at those other factors. Have they got the base factors in? What's happening in terms of their other health, their nutrition, any medication changes? Have they recently had a virus or anything big changes like that going on too? So really zooming out to get as big a picture as possible to see where they are. And what they're doing. And then if they are managing, if everything else has kind of stayed the same for a while, if they're managing a sustainable routine that they can repeat day in, day out without any of those big boom bust or, you know, patterns, then we can start to look at adding in a tiny bit of movement. And it's the idea that nothing else should change. So you should still be able to manage the same routine. You should be able to manage your daily activities without any kind of changes. You may feel a teeny bit tired after exercise, but not enough that it wipes you out for the rest of the day or any days after that. So we're really trying to almost add that drop of water in without causing any further ripples when we add in movement. And I think everyone's quite different with that. Probably you find that with your clients too. But like you said, some people really are so keen to move and they will start perhaps at a time where if I was, you know, I'd probably say wait a little bit longer, but they so are craving movement. And that's okay. We might just start with very gentle mobility movements, a range of movement work or breath work. So there's still a way to inject movement in a safe way. Others want to wait further along in their journey till they can do much more functionally before they even think about adding movement. And it's okay to be on either end of that spectrum, anywhere in between. I think it's quite personal about when you feel ready for exercise. Given what we said, there's so much fear and worry, and depending what their own experience has been prior to that point in their journey about it, to what that looks like. But typically, yeah, that's kind of the main things I look for in instability.
Yeah, and I mean, you use this analogy of the activity cup, and I mean, you kind of have, in a way, discussed.
I like analogies.
Just through answering. Yeah, and I love that a drop of water, just putting the drop of water in without the ripples. That was a really nice visual as well, like just that little tiny bit. But I was wondering if there's anything else you want to say about some guidelines for finding a baseline and the importance of understanding your activity cup.
maybe if it's helpful, I had somebody message me through Instagram this morning who was had a vaccine injury, built up her baseline, now has experienced a reinfection. So baseline has gone backwards. And then it's like, sometimes it's this idea of like starting over and like, how do we even, where do we even begin now?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I guess it is a case of you just have to start where you are, but how do people know where they are?
So I guess finding your baseline or finding your activity caps, your activity cap is the idea of this empty cup that we start with each day, and everyone's got different size cups. So a healthy normal person might have a massive jug, whereas some people might feel they have not even a shot glass. And then it's everything we do. So whether it's brushing our teeth, getting dressed, going for a walk, working, everything we do, it's like adding water or liquid to our cup. The idea is that we finish the end of the day and there's a bit of space in our cup. We're not overflowing. And then the next day the cup will empty and so we can fill it up again. If we overflow the cup, then of course we're kind of using more than we have of our capacity, and that's going to make the next day much harder. We've also got to mop up the spilled water, the love analogies, and so we don't always have the same cup size every day. Ideally, again, when we're saying we're going for that stability, we are aiming to have a similar size cup each day, but there are always things that are out of our control, like you said, whether it's another illness or we have been forced to do perhaps more than we would have ideally paced or planned, and that's just life. So learning to adjust our cup. So assessing what size your cup is in the first place is tricky. I tend to recommend writing down everything that you do already. So starting absolutely basic, because you often think, well, I don't do anything. And then you write down things like had a phone call with a doctor or fed the dog and then hung up some washing. You're like, oh, actually, I have done perhaps more than I realized. And then you're going to say, well, was that typical day normal for me? Could I repeat that day in, day out, every single day, or would that not be repeatable? So the repeatable factor is key. If you can't repeat that day, that is not your baseline. That's a higher than a normal day. You're overfilling your cup. So it's trying to use that to kind of find out. And there's other ways as well of doing it, but I quite like there's a simple way of just kind of trying to find what you can do day in, day out to find your baseline. And then in terms of kind of adding a movement, like we said, that little drop that we're adding in, it's trying to add that to your cup without getting that spillage, without overdoing it and creating more of that sort of knock-on effect the days after. So adding exercise or movement should not trigger any sort of changes in your cup capacity for the following days after that. Finding when you've had that kind of setback and you're not sure where you're at to get, what can you do that's in your capacity right now that you can repeat day in, day out, even if it feels way less? And it's sometimes letting go of some of those comparisons of even where you've been further at different points in your journey. It's really coming back to, where am I in this moment? What can I do?
And I really like the idea of getting people to write things down, because I know sometimes I'll speak with clients and there's a bit of a disconnect between how much is actually happening in a day and how that's impacting them, you know, physically. And that idea of, is what I'm doing repeatable day in, day out? I think that's a really nice exercise for people.
I don't know if you use the 3-day window as well, but often people kind of go directly what they've done and direct consequences. And as we know, it's not always as simple as direct. That. It can, yes, it can be less of a direct cause and effect. It can be stacking several things. So individually, you managed all those things perfectly fine, but because you put them on one day or several days in a row, that's what then triggered sort of this increase in symptoms or your body struggling to cope. So I like looking at 3 days as a simple way of pacing and going, what did I do yesterday? What am I doing tomorrow? What am I doing today? To give you this kind of little snapshot of like to understand, to help you adjust the levels. Because obviously, like I said, perfect pacing doesn't really exist as we know. We can do our absolute best, but there's always something that might just throw that off, or we choose to do something, or we, you know, we choose to push ourselves because of something else going on, or hospital appointments and doctors. That, you know, there's so many factors that can just change it, and it's knowing how to respond to that and adapt rather than panic or ignore the fact that's happened and just keep going as normal. So we have to be quite responsive to what's happening. And yeah, adjust then. Okay, I did do more than I wanted to yesterday, but today I'm going to perhaps reevaluate or reassess what I was planning on doing and bring that down a level.
Yeah, and I think as women as well, I mean, I'm not sure if this is true for all your clients or many of your clients, but I know that my capacity is very different depending on where I am in my menstrual cycle. So like second half of the cycle when I've got lovely progesterone in my system, I'm just like great. But then you know, when my estrogen and when all the hormones are lower, then like it just can't, you know, things are, the cup is smaller just naturally. And I think that's also what makes it really tricky to navigate for some people.
Yeah. And that comes around so quickly, doesn't it? It's like, oh, we've just got over 6 months and it's here again. I've actually got clients that have specific programs for that point in their cycle where their energy levels drop. So I think it's just great how we can become so in tune with our bodies, and that just helps our expectations and knowing like, okay, I'm here. I'm not going to try and challenge or push my body when it's not in a place to do so. And that's okay.
I know I've got another question for you, but I just wanted to jump to this one, which is use this analogy because you love an analogy.
I do.
Exercise as a dial. So it's not like a start stop, but it's like a turning up, turning down. Can you explain this a little bit more? Because I thought that would be like really helpful.
Yeah. So I love this idea. Like I think we've already mentioned a few times that, you know, so many of us can be slightly all or nothing, or like you said, on off. And we have this approach to exercise that we might go, great, I'm good, I can exercise. And nope, I suddenly can't. And it can feel very start, stop. And also it can feel really frustrating because it can be you just start to build up some momentum and then something happens. Or like if it's a part of your cycle, you've got lower energy, or you get a slight cold or something that just knocks you again. Or you go on holiday and you had to stop because you had to use energy on other things. And so it just becomes really frustrating, like you're not making any progress. So I much prefer the idea of a dial that just means we can kind of turn things up and down depending on what's going on for us and these other aspects of our health or our life that's impacting our ability to exercise. And it's also a much sort of more flexible view of looking at it, because we can just constantly do these micro adjustments to adjust to how we're feeling on any given day, rather than going, well, I can today, so I'm going to, I don't know, do everything I had planned. But then the next day, I don't feel as great, so I'm going to do nothing. It's going, well, actually, I might do some rather than none, or I might just adjust, or I plan to do some strength exercises, but actually, I don't feel like that. I'll do some gentle mobility or just some breath work instead. And that kind of ability just to kind of move us down and adjusting the dose of exercise, as well as perhaps when we do or how we look at exercise, can be really much more flexible. When we're too rigid about things and like those one extreme to the other, I think that actually stops us more. And if we have this idea of doing less and doing more sometimes and kind of working with our bodies more. So again, I just really like that image of how we can do this. And personally, I find that really helpful myself, because I had a long cycle of infections with my bladder. And every time I got an infection, it just felt like everything stopped and I had to start again and again and again. And then I had this idea where I can just continuously keep going, but the whole time I'm just adjusting it to meet my body where it's at. And suddenly that tiny mindset change was then huge in how I viewed exercise myself.
Yeah. And I think, for someone like myself, I have a very, very great sense of self-discipline, which is so helpful until it becomes damaging.
Yeah.
And if there's a program, then I will follow it and I will not miss a session. And, you know, this is probably one of the reasons.
I remember that. Yeah.
But, you know, because it's you override your body so much because you're disciplined enough to do so. But that idea of a dial, especially because I know that my energy levels will fluctuate based on my menstrual cycle, it's like I can now, you know, as you say, turn that dial up in the second half of my cycle and turn that dial down around in the earlier half of my cycle around menstruation. And it's like you don't need to stop. You just take down the intensity of the session or the duration of the session, or you don't.
And it's not a step back either. It's not I think we often think if we reduce things again, it's like going backwards, and it's not. You're just adjusting. You're just working with your body in that time. So I think, again, it helps let go of that, you know, this kind of fight for progress. Obviously, we'd love to get progress all the time, but I say to my clients, it's okay if sometimes we switch things for maintenance setting. We just turn that dial down just to maintain where you are. That's okay. And sometimes when there's lots of other things going on, or you've had a change in medication, or, you know, something else has happened to you, it's okay not to be constantly pushing to, you know, make that progress. And it's also okay just to be. Like, I think sometimes with chronic illness, we're constantly striving to improve and get better. And that can be exhausting itself. So it's okay just to do what you feel like you want to do, just to maintain where you are and support your health in that way without kind of trying to better yourself all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was a really big shift for me, this idea of what can you be consistent with versus progress with. So it's about the consistency of working out on a consistent basis or moving on a consistent basis versus trying to progress on a consistent basis. It's like just making sure you're doing it and you're showing up and you're moving your body.
Yeah, and the enjoyment. Again, we can do things because we enjoy it, not because it necessarily is, you know, well, that does bring us benefit, but, you know, not because it's not working towards our goal. It doesn't count. It's just like, again, being in the moment with your body and what you can manage in that part that, you know, you just, again, that maintenance mode or just doing it because you want to do it or choosing to do it, that's all okay too. So all counts.
It does all count. And just coming back to then a few more kind of more practical questions.
Yeah.
In your book, you talk about the three core areas, strength, mobility, cardiovascular exercise, and you have some example programs that you've written for clients on how to structure the week with a combination of these different things and rest, of course. So what's the importance of each of these? And generally, how do people think about structuring each of them into their week?
Yeah, so in terms of my priority, I'd say strength is number one, obviously because it's improving our muscular strength, it improves our ability to function, and obviously our health supports our joints. But also, especially if you're new to coming back to exercise and not doing a lot of activity, it does have cardiovascular benefits too. So if you were to pick just one thing, strength is a really good place to start. And you can often tailor it down so much more than cardiovascular exercise, which is much more obviously demands of higher energy. I think when you say strength, people often imagine weightlifting in the gym, and obviously that's quite an extreme way of doing it. So we can bring it all the way down to doing basic movements in bed. Again, depends on your starting point level, because some people, for building strength, it can be bodyweight exercises or holding very light weights. And as you progress, you want to obviously increase the demands on the muscle to promote that change and create more strength. So we obviously can increase from there. But what I mean is you can start at a low level. So it's a really great point to kind of add something in. Cardiovascular exercise, obviously great for our cardiovascular system and for our general health too. Even more so for when you've got chronic illness, like you mentioned before, it can be great for improving autonomic tone and helping your body learn to regulate again when doing cardiovascular exercise in the right kind of way. So things like your horizontal forms, so things when you've got postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome or not dysautonomia, or like we need worked with you about trying to increase your capacity for walking by helping to monitor your heart rate and stay within your aerobic capacity. So there's lots of methods you can do to build up slowly that way. Can be quite challenging to add in terms of demands. And also not to forget that just walking around the house, getting dressed, everyday function, we're all still moving. So again, depending on your starting level, you can be doing cardio, just doing basic home chores at home. And then mobility is one of my favorites. It's just a way of moving, basically. So it's a little bit different to stretching in that we are focusing on moving through a range of motion that we can control. So it's much more of an active range of movement versus stretching, which tends to be more passive range of movement exercises. So it tends to be a little bit more comfortable or safer for the joints. That's not to say that stretching is deemed bad at all, but it can be quite intense for our nervous systems, and mobility is just a great way to build up that level of movement. So mobility is great because it's very calming for your body too. So because it's such a gentle way to move, it can be great to kind of stimulate more of our parasympathetic nervous system, help to really breathe, connect back with the body. So we often use it as a way to kind of wind the body down at the end of the day, or if someone's feeling too fatigued to perhaps do their strength program as planned, they can use mobility as a way to still move and a way to keep that habit of movement up in their routine, but not the intensity. So like we said, on that dial, like adjusting things down to work with your body in that moment. So they've all got different benefits, and also what you create as your own schedule of movement can be very different depending on your own goals, what you enjoy, what you get out of it, if you like being outside versus if you like being able to exercise from home. But generally having some kind of movement, strength and cardio in your kind of structure is ideal. But if I was starting with one, I would start with some very gentle strength work.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about was pain, because I think sometimes pain stops us from exercising. And sometimes when we're in pain, we shouldn't exercise. But then sometimes it can be really helpful to exercise when there is pain. So I know you go into more detail in this area in the book, but is there any kind of thing that you could say on this very briefly now?
I think going back to what is pain can be really helpful to understand in the first place. So pain is one of our body's protective mechanisms that help the body communicate what's happening. and it's perhaps sensing that the body feels it's in danger of some sort. Pain does not always equal damage. And I think that's what people most worry about when exercising, is that if having pain means something is dangerously wrong with their body. So a bit like we did with fatigue, it's trying to tune into the body. What's the body trying to tell me in this moment? It's definitely not ignoring pain. We don't want to ignore pain or shut it off. It's really important we do listen to what the body's telling us. But like you said, it might be sometimes it can help to move because the body doesn't like being still. So say you've been stuck in bed. I know when I've had a particularly bad migraine attack and I have to be still for sort of 24 hours, my body's hurt because I'm craving movement, and actually doing some gentle mobility can be really helpful. Other times it's like, oh no, my body doesn't want to move. That's kind of making the pain feel worse. So it's trying to help the body feel safe and working within what the body feels it can cope with. So it's learning what feels right for you in your baseline of what your baseline pain feels like. There's some people that live with very high pain all the time. Their baseline of what they tolerate of pain is probably going to be quite high. But if someone's got no pain and gets some pain, obviously that's going to be quite different experience for them to go, well, what's happening here? So it obviously depends a lot on what that person's baseline situation is. Generally say new or unexplained pain is the most thing to pay the most attention to, and perhaps pause on the exercise until you know what that is or what that means. Things that feel familiar to you but perhaps aren't responding to your normal methods of pain relief or management of pain, you might just monitor more closely. Things that you recognize and can work with, it might just be you modify the exercises more given that your pain's higher. So like you said, it's not a black and white, I exercise with or without pain, but much more investigating what does that pain mean to you? What's your body trying to tell you? Can you help your body feel safer in this moment and therefore help that pain? Or do you need to stop exercise completely and perhaps seek medical advice to understand what's going on more in your body there?
Yeah, I'd also just share some of my own personal experience with pain. I don't know if you remember when we worked together, I had some pain in my left shoulder. And when we were working together, we tried to do some resistance stuff, but my body just didn't, it wasn't ready for it yet, as you kept on telling me. And as I've obviously, my capacity has changed. I don't know if you've come across functional patterns, but yeah. I started doing functional patterns about a year ago now. And it's been really helpful for that pain that I had in my shoulder. But from that, I also learned, like, in that situation, that learning to move in the right way has been really, when there is pain, has been really supportive. But if I do too much, then it goes the other way and then it starts to make the pain worse again.
It's still all the idea of, it's like this dose that your body feels it can tolerate or cope with. So when we've got very high pain or the body is very reactive, it's going to probably tolerate much less. It's probably why when you're more acutely unwell and able to do less, it didn't take much at all to trigger that kind of higher pain response. But you've gradually increased your resilience. Your body can cope with more, but it's still got its limits of what it can kind of tolerate. And the minute it starts to feel unsafe because you've perhaps pushed those tissues too much, or you're staying in a range of movement that you've perhaps got less control of, your brain starts, or your body starts to communicate that to you. So I think pain doesn't have to be scary. It's not something we should kind of fear when we do feel those sensations, but it's just kind of noticing, well, what is it trying to tell me? My body's constantly trying to look after myself. It's kind of keeping me safe. It's on overdrive half the time trying to do that. So I need to listen to it. The more I ignore it and push into that pain, the louder that pain signal is going to get because my body thinks I'm not listening to it. So we really must listen to it. When I was a teenager, they sort of taught me to ignore my pain. They sort of said, your pain isn't telling you anything. Put it in a box, ignore it. And that's why I kind of learned to push my body too much. Whereas now I'm much older and wiser, of course. I use that pain I to tell me what's going on and to help me adapt with what I'm doing. Rather than kind of be scared of it or avoid it, it's kind of like leaning into, what are you telling me? Where is it? What's feeling here? What's changing? How can I adapt it? Can I modify, like you said, the movement to make this feel better or more comfortable? Nope. Okay. I'm going to pull off and give it time to calm down and see what happens next time. But just be kind of inquisitive about it.
Yeah. And I know I didn't prepare you with this question, but something you said just kind of triggered it for me, which is something else I did. I think it was after we worked together, maybe just as we were ending working together, I did the DNRS brain retraining program. And obviously with that program, and it was very helpful for me in some ways, not necessarily from an exercise perspective, but with some other things I had going on. But I guess part of that is when you experience symptoms is you kind of like teach your body to like, in a way to like override them. And I was just curious. I mean, I think that there's so much nuance with these programs is like sometimes we, as you say, we need to listen to the pain. And then sometimes maybe, I don't know, it is helpful to override it. I was just curious what your thoughts are and if you have many clients who have mixed experiences with these types of programs.
I know there's quite a few different sort of ways of programs of working with pain now. And it's become, I think, more popular, I guess, to look into. I think it's so important. I think understanding pain science can be really, really helpful to understand what is pain, what does it mean, how can I work with it and live with it. Some clients found big or huge benefits from doing sort of pain work. And like you said, I think it depends what it is. So I know I've had clients with migraine who found that really successful. I think we don't want to go down the narrative of trying to say, like you said, ignore pain. But I think we know that pain becomes amplified. So it's like plugging into a speaker and saying that pain becomes really noisy and anything we do triggers this really loud noise. And we definitely can use tools to help kind of turn that volume back down again. So we can turn it down, but we're still listening. And I think that's quite a nice analogy of kind of trying of to, of course, analogy. But I think that's quite a nice way to think about it, because I think it's a bit of a dangerous precedent to kind of encourage you to ignore all sensations, because our body is telling us things for a reason. And also with chronic conditions, we are already at risk of some extent to ignore other new things that pop up, because we're like, oh, well, I'm used to a whole range of systemic symptoms and used to feeling a certain way. We can then typically ignore new things that pop up that perhaps do need medical attention or do need to be investigated. So I think we still need to stay that connection and listening to our pain as part of that. But definitely any tools that help your body both physiologically and also emotionally kind of heal from perhaps past traumas regarding pain to quieten down that volume and sort of de-amplify that noise can be helpful.
And I just have one more question for you, which is, I think at the very end of the book, you share in your journey that you had to change your belief systems around movement. And that's kind of been part of the conversation today anyway, I think, not necessarily directly, but it's been there. And I know my belief systems about movement have also had to change, and I'm sure many of your clients as well. So what unhelpful belief systems did you have, and how have you been able to reframe them?
I think I was definitely part of the all or nothing crew. And I think it's definitely so much better now, but it's funny how even after all this time, all this work, all this awareness that I have as well, it can still just pop its head up and I'll be like, well, I'll just do extra four lengths of swimming, even though I'm already feeling a bit tired that day, or, you know, it's still kind of there. But the difference is I'm so much more aware if it does pop up. I'm like, cool, where's that coming from today? Like, you know, and I can question it versus just believing it. And also that probably links in with perfectionist. I've always been a bit of a perfectionist and kind of what's good enough to count. And I think a lot of clients, again, relate to that. It's kind of, well, am I doing enough for it to count? Or, but I also don't want to do too much. And so I used to kind of push myself to do what I felt counted, or trying to keep up with what I used to be able to do or what my peers were doing, or, you know, all is the time that pushing myself. Whereas now, like you said at the very beginning, I give myself so much more self-compassion. I think when my body is already having to work so hard just to function, exercise is a tool to help support my body. I'm not here to punish it or, you know, push it past what I can cope with all the time. So I'm much kinder to myself. And if I can't do as much as I expected, even if I feel I've lowered my expectations that particular day, and even when I get on my mat, I still have to lower them again, that's okay. It all still counts. I think I'm so much better at that mindset with myself. And I hope that's what I share, particularly with my clients on Instagram, is this kindness to ourselves, because having any kind of chronic condition is hard enough as it is. And I think being hard on ourselves on top of that just is the last thing we need to do. And we know that pain obviously amplifies that critical voice too. So there's so many things going against us. So the most we can be is our biggest cheerleader and say, you're doing a great job, you're trying your best, and that's all that counts.
I've got goosebumps listening to that. And I resonate with all those belief systems as well, because I think that good enough to count club, I was definitely like lead member of that or something. Is there anything else you want to say as we wrap up? Tell us about the book. Where can people find it? And where can they find you? And then anything else you want to share before I let you go?
Thank you. Well, yes, the book is available now, very excitingly. So you can get it from Amazon, Waterstones, or like UK booksellers. Paperback in the UK is out now, I should say. The paperback in other countries such as Australia and America is available for September. I'm so sorry that you have to wait. I wish it's all available at the same time, but you can still get the audiobook and the ebook in those countries now as well. You can find me on Instagram at @theautoimmune and on my website, www.theautoimmune. And you can see how to work with me for one-to-one coaching. And also I do an accessible on-demand online Pilates studio with bed Pilates, which can be done from your bed, fully horizontal classes, and then also chronic Pilates that are just a slight level up, but both classes have plenty of adaptions. And as my main message is, it's just do what you can when you can. So very much supporting you to rest, to take breaks in classes and not push yourself.
Yeah, but thank you so much, Shelley. And do you have any final words you'd like to share with the community before that you go?
Well, normally I do share my do what you can, what you can is my ultimate phrase, because I feel when it comes down to it, that is the main principle. Like I said, be kind to yourself throughout your journey and stay within what feels right for your body. Because actually, I think we're often wiser than we let ourselves believe or think. So you often know more what your body needs intuitively, but we tend to ignore it.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Well, thank you so much for your time. I have to share very quickly, I read your book on my phone because I couldn't work out how else to read the PDF. Zoe sent me a copy in advance. And then I was like, I don't really know how to get this on something that's readable because I didn't want to have it on my laptop. So I kind of read the whole book on my phone. But even though I did that, it was still a wonderful read. I got, you know, even having lived through this experience myself, I got so much from reading it. And as I said, beautifully written, loads of analogies, loads of diagrams, and just such a great resource for people to have and read, whether they have autoimmunity or some other chronic health condition.
But thank you. That
thank
means
you for
so
all
much.
Your time and effort. And I think it was 2 years it took you.
Yes. I mean, I think the whole conversation started 3 years ago. And then I got very unwell one particular year. So it was pushed back a bit. But yes, looking back, I don't know how I quite did it with planning a wedding and running a business and everything else. Probably not
Neither
following my
I.
advice through that period of resting quite as much as I needed. But
yeah, I think given everything that you manage in your life day to day, your own health and then your business and, you know, personal relationships and Jimmy, you know, I just think it's absolutely inspirational. And yeah, everybody should go and buy the book because it is a fantastic resource.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure. See you all in the next episode.